This is PodTech.net. I'm Michael Johnson, and my guest today is Daryl Plummer, who is Managing Vice President and Chief of Research at Gartner. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So what I'd like you to do first is to define SOA and what its importance is or has been, or why it's been rising over the last few years.
The definition of SOA, really, I guess the easiest way to say it is that SOA is the conceptualization of a computing architecture where the units of work are software services that are related together through either event-driven requests or through programmatic requests for execution. Now, that's a pretty geeky way of saying it. You know, essentially what we're saying, however, is that if you have software services, which are simply pieces of software that do work for you, where you don't have to know how they do what they do, and you don't have to involve yourself in doing it, you just say, please do something for me, and it does it. You know, that's a concept that's been around for decades. It's not new. But true software services are relatively new to the market, in that they're true services given the fact that they require much less of you than, say, objects or components did in the past. If you think of a service in terms of electricity coming into your home, and you use maybe a hair dryer, or you use a space heater or a fan, you don't know how the power is generated, probably. You know, nuclear power, well, if it was that and the plant was next door, you might care. But otherwise, you don't know, and you don't care. You care that when you plug something in, you can find the plug on the wall, the outlet. That's the interface. That when you plug it in, your plug fits. That when you flip the power switch on the hair dryer or heater or fan, that you get power. And that power is delivered consistently well and at a cost that you can deal with. Might be too much, but you still live with it. That's what a service is. And when you deliver that in software, you know, you've got a software service. You're saying that it may be, I want to know what hotel rooms are available next week in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I tell it Fort Lauderdale, Florida, the time I'm going to be there, and it tells me what hotel rooms are available. That's a service, okay? A service-oriented architecture is simply a computing architecture using those kinds of services to make up the units of work. So if we build a service-oriented architecture, we're trying to modularize everything to make sure that we have as many pieces and parts as are necessary to build lots and lots of different solutions. Because if you go back to analogies, when you go to in your kitchen, you want to cook a meal, you've got recipes in a recipe book, you know, many recipes, and many ways of going about preparing a recipe. Software should be the same way. When you go to run a business and you want to use IT systems, you should have many options for how you do things in that business using software services. And you combine them together to get processes which run your business. And if you're a real smart business person, you're going to say, I don't want to be locked in to one way of getting those processes. I want many ways to combine them together to get value. That's what SOA is. That's what SOA provides. And it's an opportunity to business because services can be delivered in the form of things that business understands, business tasks.
And it gives them a lot of flexibility as well.
It does. Flexibility, agility is really the end game here,
and
right?
New ways of using the very data that's being generated by, or the services that are being generated, because it gives you different entry points into that system.
Absolutely. Okay. You've got if a business wants to be agile and they have one way of doing something and it takes them forever to change it, they're not exactly going to be as competitive as they could be. If they've got lots of service offerings and they can change it to use it one way today, another way next month or next week, they've got more options. They can be more agile.
So that would help when new technologies are coming about because it just gives you more ways of looking at it.
Absolutely. Well, it gives you more than that, actually. It gives you more ways of looking at new technologies. It gives you more ways of actually accessing that technology because you can take a service and hide the differences between the old technology and the new technology behind the service interface. This is one of the reasons web services were so important. Web services are specific kinds of software services. They're like when you unplug the hairdryer from your electricity and you go over to England or to some other country, you may find that you find the outlet on the wall, but the hairdryer doesn't fit because the plug's a different shape. You know, you get a plug adapter. Web services provide plug adapters, as it were, for services. They provide voltage transformation, you know, like SOAP, the Simple Object Access Protocol. And they basically make things that are not designed to work together be able to use the same set of standards. So you can hide the differences between new technologies and the old technologies behind the standards that that type of model brings.
Now, I mean, it sounds kind of like what virtualization is, in a way. Is that, are there similarities? I mean, there's some true differences between them
yeah.
because of the particular application. But are they working in the same kinds
Absolutely.
Of ways?
Absolutely. All true services are a virtualization. They are a virtualization or abstraction away from the actual function that delivers the service. You know, you go to a restaurant and you sit down and you want a meal. You want the halibut, you know. The chef does the work of preparing it. You don't have to, so you're sitting there. So you basically, you get a virtual menu preparation for you. You're mm-hmm. not cooking it yourself. So yeah, it's virtualization. Yeah, it's software virtualization. And now some people talk about virtual services. Well, services are already virtual. You know, what they're talking about is saying, let's take it another layer. Let's say you don't have to know exactly where the service is or what the endpoint is, the URL. You know, you just say, here's what I want to do. And it will deliver you a set of services that do that. So you've got a virtualization on top of the normal service virtualization, which gives even more value.
Now, in SOA, you've got all of these different parts that you've put this layer on top of, mm-hmm. and you're getting information from all those different parts of the mm-hmm. system. Isn't there a lot of information being generated mm-hmm. in there? How does one, you know, how are businesses going to work with managing that sort of thing?
Well, yeah, this is a big hot topic right now. There is a lot of information flying around. There are issues of information management that have yet to be anywhere near solved. How do you view a customer versus how I view a customer? These are age-old problems. They're not going to be solved by SOA. But certainly what we get into is we start doing information management, metadata management as a discipline with SOA because it becomes so critical. And that can give us an opportunity to solve the problems. The other thing is that when you're managing not only the information, you have to manage the services themselves. Are they doing what they're supposed to do? Did they perform at a certain point? Did they allow the right access to it? These are policies about how they're governed that is a really very, very hot topic in the industry, and it's going to continue to be for quite some time.
Well, there's no one solution for it, but I know that certainly security's got to be a concern, because if you've got one more layer that sits on top of everything and talks to everything within a system, say an information management system, mm-hmm. then you've also got essentially one system that can access all of them as well. Mm-hmm. Is security going to be a concern for companies as they start to implement SOA, or will yes. governance cover that sort of thing?
Well, governance will cover it. Security will be a concern, though. All right, take your example. And move further with it. You've got services are about hiding things. It's about virtualization, you know, in large measure. When I go and apply for a mortgage using a mortgage application service, there's no guarantee that that will be the end of it, right? The bank that I apply for the mortgage through or the mortgage company may go to a underwriter, they may go to an insurance provider, they may go to a realty or agency, and all of them may use services as well. Well, because I had access or gave secure access or permission for my information to go to the bank, does that mean I gave permission to go to the realtor or the insurance company or the underwriter? Well, that's a question of contractual obligation. You know, when I entered into the contract with the mortgage company, what was my understanding of how that information would be used? The answer is going to be generally, yes, I gave them permission to do that because I have to in order to allow the chain to progress forward. We do that already. But then you start thinking, well, what if I allow that permission, what about the security of all that information? And that is one of the reasons why you see things like the Liberty Alliance come out, Federated Identity Management. That's one of the things why you see WS Security come out, which is based on SAML-based security, which is token passing, because you've got to have a way of delegating security authentication and permission down the chain in a service-oriented situation. And that is a major concern for service-oriented architecture, but it will be resolved in the issue of managing and governing services. It's one of the big key tenets of it.
How does SOTA work into that?
Actually, SOTA, if we're talking about the same SOTA, SOTA is service-oriented development of applications. Yeah, and it was one of those acronyms that I created, which I probably should have slept on it. I love the acronym because it is something that had to be there. But when you get into four-letter acronyms, you know you've been awake too long. But SOTA is really the design, not design time, but the design characteristics of an SOA. All right? Just like we had component-based development with components, we have object-oriented development with objects. We needed a service-oriented development to go with service-oriented architecture. And SOTA comes into it to say, hey, guess what? when you go into a service-oriented architecture, the way systems are built and the way they are maintained changes. If you are not aware of and don't take into account those changes, you will fail to build an adequate system. For example, when you build a service-oriented system, how do you test it? Services may exist anywhere. They're not just with Sally's desk down the hall. They may be across the world. You may not own them. You may never meet the people who built them. How do you actually test it? You can't necessarily just say, as in the old world, you'd say, hey, Sally, I'm building this module that uses your package of code. Can you shoot that over to the network? I'll drop it into my project. I'll build it, and I'll test against it. Well, services, I may never know who built it. I don't even know what kind of system it's running on, so I can't guarantee that I can drop it into our environment to simulate it. So how do I actually test my system? I have to hit their live system in some cases. SOTA says there are principles that you have to go through. One, you have to simulate it. Don't hit the live system. Maybe they should give you a test version. You know, if you're going to use it, you should have enough of a relationship to say, give me a test version I can use. Those kinds of things are there, and it's a lot more. It breaks down simply this way. In a service-oriented development model, you have to assemble and orchestrate as opposed to code, build, and run. You have to have the ability to do business process management, which is to model the actual business process and then decompose the steps of that process into a set of software services. You have to have the ability to search and discover the correct services. So you have to have registry and repository. And it is an aspect of it is continuous evolution of a system as opposed to a waterfall design and build and execute. You've got in a service-oriented sense, a service-oriented application never ends. It's never finished. If you could call it an application at all, it's never finished. I usually use the example of the Sagrada Familia, the church in Barcelona, designed by Gaudi, that was never intended to be finished. If you ever go visit it, you'll see it's never going to be finished because nobody can make heads or tails of that place. And in SOA world, it's the same thing. If you build a set of services and combine them together into a set of processes, businesses are changing every day. The way we deal with customers, what products we're selling, what shipping company we're going to use, what billing cycle we're going to go to, and so forth, they have to be able to change those processes likewise, which means the service-oriented system is evolving just at the same pace as the business is evolving.
So, I mean, it's very, I guess, in an ideal world, it's very fluid. It's got to be fluid and got to respond. So, essentially, SOA is not something you could really even peg down, can you?
Well, you could peg down.
I think you can kind of define it, but not. It seems like what it does seems to just evolve as a system itself changes.
Absolutely, you hit it exactly. You can define what an SOA is supposed to be conceptually, but in reality, no two companies will have the same SOA.
Thus, the need for governance.
Absolutely, absolutely. You've hit exactly one of the most key aspects of this. Let's look at a concept we talk about now called the business process platform. Now, a business process platform is essentially the infrastructure, the development environment for composing services together to get business solutions. But what differentiates it from just the suites that we see out there is content, business content, being in the form of business processes, business functions, business data, and business collaboration, right? No two businesses have the same business process platform. At the same time, every business already has a business process platform because every business has steps, processes, and tasks, and collaboration, and data. The question is, how do you control it? How do you make sure that it is set up in a way that you can evolve it in a consistent way to get value? That's where SOA comes in. Right? So like you say, you can define it conceptually, but in reality, it morphs itself, and you can never really pin it down. And that's a good thing.
What are some sources that people can go to? Because it's obviously, it's so new. It's not new, but at least at this level, the awareness of it is pretty new. For companies that might be struggling with that, where are they going to find out more about issues of governance?
Well, they can come to Gartner. That's the obligatory answer, but it also has the virtue of being true. But we find many people get their information from vendors who are selling them the products, which is a very dangerous thing to do. Because you get trapped into what the vendor thinks is most important at the moment. We recommend that customers investigate other companies. Well, first, let me say this in order. Investigate yourself. What you have to do is you have to look at your business and say, what things do we do in our business that would benefit from becoming services? This is not an issue of service-oriented architecture yet, right? When you do that, you learn a lot.
You could almost redefine your business.
Absolutely. You can redefine your business, and if you don't want to redefine your business, then you're just identifying opportunities. Once you've done that, then you can go and find someone who will do an SOA readiness assessment. Many of the vendors offer it. Many of the professional services companies offer it to tell you are you ready to do those things. You will get advice from vendors, but there are also some things that you should look for: SOA blueprints. These are examples of how people structured SOA in the past. Unfortunately, most of them are coming from vendors. Mm-hmm. But if you go, I think TechTarget may have just bought this, but the middleware company used to have a set of SOA blueprints that they took submissions from different vendors on how to do a blueprint for SOA. That was the serverside.com, and I think TechTarget bought that rights to those blueprints. You can go to companies like IBM or Microsoft that have their own SOA blueprints initiatives. And the nice thing about those blueprints is that they're not mired in product. They're about conceptualization of what you're doing, and then they tie it to product quickly for you later. So those are places that you could go, but I would strongly suggest starting with self-examination. You know, and certainly a company like Gartner or any analyst firm that talks about SOA can advise you on self-examination. And once you get to that point, the sky's the limit.
Well, I've been speaking today on the podcast with Daryl Plummer, who is Managing Vice President, Chief of Research, and Chief of the Gartner Fellows Program. And it's been great talking with you on the podcast today.
Thank you very much. It's been interesting.